rough, but he was just interested in fulfilling material desires. But he was told by Kamakya Devi to chant this mantra, so in effect he was initiated into chanting by Kamakya Devi. So he just chanted the mantra, and two chapters pass where it's described the things that he underwent in the matter of detachment from material attraction and gradual increased attraction for spiritual attainment. Although he didn't understand what was happening to him, what was happening to him is described in two chapters. And in the beginning of the third chapter, roughly, he goes through a number of experiences and goes, eventually he goes to Vrindavan, comes here to Vrindavan. And some persons are fatigued from, I think, from our long walk around Govardhan, early to rise this morning. When he gets to Vrindavan, he's chanting his Madan Gopal mantra very, very, very intensely. It's like the vehicle to carry him to the spiritual realm. But there's obstacles, and of course one of those obstacles is he needs to receive the mercy of a resident of Vrindavan in order to understand who is this Madan Gopal. So as he's in this mood of intensely desiring the association to have the darshan of Madan Gopal, he hears this crying of a young boy in a grove. So he goes through the trees and into the grove and finds this young cowherd boy crying and crying and chanting the same mantra that he chants, his Madan Gopal mantra. And there's immediate attraction between the two personalities. And later on, Madan Gopal Gopal Kumar discloses that Radharani sent him there. That comes out later in the story. So Radharani sent him there to deliver Janasharma to the stage of spiritual perfection. So he had received his mantra, but he hadn't received instructions. And the person who was to be his instructing guru was the little cowherd boy, Gopal Kumar. So Janasharma had so many questions, and the main force behind this was he wanted to have the experience of his relationship with Madan Gopal. And what were the obstacles? What was preventing him? What should he do? And so Gopal Kumar thought very deeply, Radharani has sent me here. There must be some very effective way that I can bring him, I can fulfill the that I can fulfill the instructions that Radharani has given me. So he decides the best way to do that is to tell his own story. So he starts telling his own story. So this is a story within a story within a story within a story within a story. But the main storyline in the second part is Gopal Kumar telling his story to Janasharma. And many of the same personalities appear, particularly Narada Muni and Uddhava. At least that's the part that we're going to spend some time with. So Gopal Kumar tells the story of when he was just a cowherd boy. He actually was born in Govardhan, and he was just a cowherd boy, but not at all enlightened, just literally just a cowherd boy. And as the boys were doing their thing with the cows every day, there was one very, very, very exalted personality that would come and just be very kind to the boys. And as time passed, they could all understand He is a most exalted, saintly person. And it turns out later on, this disclosure, it's actually the Supreme Lord who had manifested as his spiritual master, which is another part of our scriptural teachings, that the spiritual master is a manifestation of Krishna, but manifest in such a way that we can see, because Madan Gopal, we couldn't see, but his spiritual master, he could see. But literally, it was the personality of Godhead, not in our ordinary sense of the spiritual master carrying out the orders of Krishna. It was the Supreme Lord. And he was very, 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 very kind. And he instructed them in many ways, and the boys became very attached to this great saint, but particularly Gopu Kumar became very attached to him. And so, at one point, Gopu Kumar asked him for some instruction. Can you give me some wonderful means by which I can become elevated like you are? So the saint said, very well, I was waiting for you to ask such a question. Go take bath in the river Jamuna, and when you come back, I'll give that to you. So he was very excited and took his bath and came back, and he gave him Madan Gopal mantra. And unlike Jana Sharma, who just was told by Kamakhya Devi, chant this mantra, Kamakhya didn't say, chant it to yourself, chant it out loud, chant a certain number of times, chant on beads or without beads or with instruments or standing on your head, or didn't say anything, just chant this mantra. So this saint, Sadhu, gave more detailed instructions, not complete, but some more instructions about the Madan Gopal mantra. And then Gopu Kumar's life started changing just from the mantra. And again, this is a refrain. The chanting of his mantra carried him through incredible experiences. And each one of them seemed to be very, very, very attractive, kind of like in a parallel way with Narada visiting different people, but this was Gopu Kumar experiencing these things. He became Indra. And he ruled for a long time. But then he just lost interest in being the king of heaven as he was chanting his mantra. He just wanted some intimacy in relationship with Madan Gopal. He lost interest altogether in being King Indra. And one after another of experiences. And he goes through, he visits Vaikuntha. And then he visits Ayodhya. And then he visits Dwaraka. Again, very similar to part one of Narada visits. But this is now Gopu Kumar in a very naive way, just like a young boy. Although he has years and years and years and years of experience, he somehow doesn't age beyond being a little boy, something like the four Kumaras. He just remains a cowherd boy. But there's one thing that becomes more and more prominent in his consciousness, and that is his very, very deep attachment. Very, very deep attachment for achieving the association of Madan Gopal. And so he's in Dwaraka. Narada is with him. Narada has accompanied him through many of these sojourns, and so he starts. Narada recognizes and tells Gopal Kumar, you're eligible for the highest perfection of life. Actually, you're more qualified than I am. And the questions that you have, I'm not capable of answering, but Uddhava, he's capable of answering. Because he's had intimate contact, as he's received the full mercy of the gopis. He stayed in Vrindavan for a long, long time, just as we visited yesterday Uddhava Kund. Some of us visited Uddhava Kund. Some of us were at Radha Kund instead of Uddhava Kund, looking for the others in Manasi Ganga again. But we visited Uddhava Kund, and here he performed very, very great austerities. And as we heard also on the other side of Kusum Sarovar, we first began our parikram, there's another place where it's said that he attained that destination that he was hankering for, and that is to become a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that as the gopis would pass, the dust from their feet would come and touch his body, and that would be the perfection of his life as far as he was concerned. So, now I've got to find... the section. What I wanted to read specifically was Uddhava's contrasting the mood of Vaikuntha and Dwaraka with the mood of Vrindavan. But I didn't mark the spot, and this is... not like a book, it's a computer. I'm sure there's some ways to do this, but I didn't mark it. Now, there's some very, very detailed description of Krishna's the intimacy that exists in Vrindavan that cannot exist in Vaikuntha because of the appreciation of the Supreme Lord in majesty. The full opulences of the Supreme Lord are manifested in Vaikuntha and in Dwaraka, and because of that majestic display, intimacy is blocked. But in Vrindavan, that majesty is covered. It's also there in Vrindavan, but it's covered by the sweetness of Krishna and the sweetness of the relationships that exist with Krishna. And as a result, the residents in Vrindavan overlook completely the majesty of Krishna, the godhood of Krishna, and they're able to appreciate the intimate loving exchange that Krishna, that also comprises the nature of Krishna. So Narada is attempting to describe this to Gopal Kumar, comparing Vrindavan and where they are right now, which is Dwaraka. And Narada is describing this and he loses control. He becomes stunned and speechless. He can't go on. But Gopal Kumar is very, very, very eager to hear more. So Narada overcomes his ecstasy and begins to narrate some more. So I'm just going to read that there's extended purports. Basically, I'm scanning for this thing where it speaks about humility. Narada said, "Dear devotee of Lord Gopal Dev, O son of a cowherd, the topmost of all places called Goloka is far away from here. It is full of all splendor and lies beyond the border of all other places, including Vaikuntha. So I'm reading from chapter 5, part 2. This Goloka comprises the divine Vrajabhumi of Mathura district. The city of Mathura is also present there, unable to remain separate from her own essence, Vrindavan, and the other forests of Vrajabhumi. The entire region of Sri Mathura is called Goloka because it is a land predominated by the cows. Although a confidential place, it is famous by that name everywhere. This abode is obtainable only by the purest sentiments which follow the lead of the sublime love of the residents of Braja. There's commentary, but I'm skipping. Such pure love for the personality of God, it is never achieved by focusing one's attention on His supreme power, nor is it born from fear and reverence. This prema can only be achieved by thinking of the Lord as one's own dear friend, even though He is beyond all worlds and space in between. And pure love for Him is also beyond everything existing in all worlds. Although it imitates the ways of the ordinary world, this reciprocal affection is supramundane. It combines intimate sweetness with amazing opulence and worldly simplicity. Long purport. The dealings of the Lord and His devotees here increase their, in Goloka, increase their mutual love in such a way as is not possible in Vaikuntha, the abode of His supreme opulence. Ayodhya and Dwaraka are similar to Vaikuntha, but Goloka is even greater than both of them. Therefore, Krishna has located this world far away. He's already visited Ayodhya, and now they're in Dwaraka. In that abode of Goloka, the residents share special pleasure pastimes with the Lord and realize the ultimate limit of sweetness. Indeed, I think this world displays the very essence of Lord Hari's most confidential godhood. Only Goloka, the crest jewel of all worlds, situated above Vaikuntha, can possess such topmost glories. The Goloka of Mathura district within the material world is also so supremely great that no one can properly describe its amazing glories. Please listen, dear friend, because my unsteady tongue is itching to speak. I will now uncover for you to see a jewel I have long kept stored away in the treasure chest of my heart. When the personality of Godhead Krishna, Lord of Goloka, wants to enjoy His various pastimes on the highest platform of pure love, He descends to the material world, complete with all His partial expansions at the end of a certain dwarpa yuga, indicating that once in every day of Brahma, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna comes and manifests the fullness of His Goloka pastimes. Non-different from His personal expansions, which assume many different appearances, the Lord suddenly abandons His abode of Vaikuntha, and so on, His paraphernalia, and entourages of those abodes, and His own naturally supreme powers. He just leaves all that behind. He doesn't care for it. He wants to experience the exclusive taste of the love that He has for the residents of Vrindavan. He also leaves far behind His exclusive devoted consort and servants like ourselves, who have no shelter but Him, neglecting all of us he goes to the material world to enjoy happiness not obtainable in any other company. He sports freely in the Vraja of Sri Mathura with the inhabitants of Vraj, whose personalities perfectly suit his purposes. By the abundance of his personal mercy, which is not manifested at any other time, he becomes directly visible to persons living then in all different worlds who possess the exceptional good fortune of firm devotion for him. I'm going to go ahead and see if I can find this section. Some consider Keshava in Mathura City. We mentioned that when Vajranab established many deities here in Vrindavan, there are four deities that were respective of different geographical areas. One of them was Haridev. Vaimanasi Ganga, and Keshava is the presiding deity that Vajranab established in Mathura. Dauji is on the eastern side of the Jamuna River, and Govindaji, Rupa Goswami's deity downtown here in Braj. Some consider Lord Keshava in Mathura city to be Lord Narayan, the friend of Nara. Asura and other demons, they were also delivered. So he's describing in a number of ecstatic ways how much love Krishna displays when he performs his pastimes in Vrindavan. From our pastime today, the visiting of the Radha Damodar temple, he allowed his abdomen to be bound to the base of a grinding mortar by ropes for tying cows. To enliven the women of Braj, he danced, entertained them in other ways, and carried out their orders as a little boy. Just for the happiness of the gopis, he would behave like a little child and dance for them. As they would clap and sing songs, he would dance very nicely, all just for giving them great pleasure. Long purport. No one can actually describe the glory of his beauty, but still, I will try to speak about this as far as I am able. His beauty amazed even himself. Seeing him, the cows, birds, bushes, creepers, and trees all became ecstatic. Anyway, I think I'm going to have to end just because of the time factor. And my apology, I'll get it together for tomorrow or the next time we have a reading for finding this nice section where he's making a... This is Narada describing the contrasting abodes of Dwarka and Vrindavan, and the abode of Dwarka and Vaikuntha, and the abode of Vrindavan. Now he's also describing how Krishna manifests himself in Vrindavan, as opposed to these other places. And then he's going to describe the qualifications of the residents of those two distinct places. And that's all in preparation so that he can go there. He gets him all fired up and prepared to go and transports him there. First he goes to Gokul, where we just visited today. And then when he's in Gokul, he meets Krishna. We'll read about that. And then he somehow gets transported to Goloka. And again he meets Krishna. And we will hear the exchanges of Krishna with the residents in Gokul, one by one of the different rasas, and it's so nice. Very appropriate for our visit here in Vrindavan. So I think I'll stop with that and see if anybody wants to raise some question. We can have some discussion. If anybody's still awake.
Sorry. Do you mind something slightly tangential?
Go ahead.
About this chanting in a cave or in a silent place.
Okay.
And I think Haridas Thakur also recommends, maybe it's in Harinam Chintamani, going in a closed room, a dark room, and wrapping the cloth around your head and chanting. And just as a practice, I was wondering if you had any comments on that.
Even in Harinam Chintamani, that's not at the top of the list.
Chanting with advanced.
Yes. Chanting. If just chanting in the association of devotees who are absorbed in the holy name is very, very powerful. Of course, chanting in a solitary place. The instruction is absorb your mind in the holy name. Whatever it takes to do that, absorb your mind in the holy name. And the instruction in Harinam Chintamani is, if all else fails, block out, plug your senses, your eyes, and your, just don't get distracted, get absorbed. But getting absorbed in the holy name in the company of devotees has a wonderful ecstasy to it. It's very enlightening, as long as one's attention stays on the holy name. And that's what our objective is. We see that in Raghava Pandit's case, and also Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's case, they were recluses. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was a leading Vaishnava and would associate with and give instructions to so many devotees, and when Sankirtan was performed, there he was with all the others in the midst of the Sankirtan party. So sometimes these kinds of extreme very, very expert in relishing exchanges with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's devotees. He's very confidential. This was spiritual identity, a very confidential associate with Srimati Radharani. So, not the top of our list of methods to employ, but it does indicate the importance of total absorption and chanting. Anything else? Yeah.
In connection with what you described, chanting the appreciation of the devotees, do you get the same benefit chanting with the devotees?
Well, I would say, from my experience, I would say it depends on where your consciousness is. from my experience, it can be just background noise. I often chant with japa tape, Prabhupada. And it can be a different experience depending upon consciousness. You can not hear your own chanting, you just hear Prabhupada's chanting. So, if the mood, this is subjective, my answer now is subjective, but if the mood is that Prabhupada is very kindly given his association by his preaching the message of Lord Chaitanya, and part of that message of Lord Chaitanya is giving us the holy name, and he's providing that in this very wonderful form of a recording of his own chanting. It's a gesture of Prabhupada's compassion and mercy, extending himself to us in that way, or extending himself to me, or any one of us. So, like you might chant with some other person in a room, or several other persons in a room. You don't tune into their chanting, but you appreciate they're very intently absorbed in chanting. And as they're intently absorbed in chanting, it's increasing my enthusiasm and determination to intently absorb myself in chanting. Particularly, Prabhupada wanted that. He was providing us the example of how to, not just he said to do it, but he gave himself as the example of how to do that. This is one form of how he gave that association. So it's a combination of the actual sound vibration of a pure devotee chanting and the appreciation of his very kindness, his great kindness of extending his association in that particular way. And I find personally, I find this more effective than anything. There are the two extremes and places in between that I don't find to be offensive chanting. I'm not hearing my chanting, I'm just hearing Prabhupada's chanting. I'm just hearing my chanting and Prabhupada's. The next thing I know is my own chanting is background noise along with Prabhupada's background noise in my mind is this. But accepting the very merciful extension of Prabhupada's association is most enlightening. Is not the same as the sound. Prabhupada is providing merciful association in that way. While here in Vrindavan, I've been chanting my rounds in Prabhupada's quarters downstairs. There's a place for ladies to do that, a place for men to do that. And Prabhupada's murti is there. Is that a picture? Is his murti? And it's enlivening, especially since I was in those quarters and Prabhupada was sitting at that same desk, receiving guests, and I was sitting in the audience with Prabhupada. So it's very moving in that very unique way. It's not just the murti, chanting and Prabhupada's murti, it's the whole experience of many devotees chanting very, very intensely. Very intensely. Very special. I was
say, I would not be as enlivened if there's nobody there. If just me and Carl Pachmurthy. It's very special being with the devotees chanting. Again, it mentioned in Hari Nam Chintamani. Anything else? Sambandha again, Abhidaya again, Prayoji again. Well, because those terms are used because it's the three divisions of the Vedas. And the Vedas is knowledge. The knowledge about the relationship of all things to the Supreme Lord. Knowledge about acting in relation to the Supreme Lord, acting within that relationship. Knowledge about the perfectional fulfillment of acting in that relationship with the Supreme Lord. Again. So, what are we supposed to do again? We're supposed to hear it, assimilate it, and act upon it. And then it becomes something else. So the Vedas include those three divisions. Sambandha again, Abhidaya again, Ayajna again. But it leads to realization of those things. Sure. Yes, they do. Sure they do. Sure. Oh, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is part of the... Besides the four Vedas, when Vyas divided the Vedas into four, this is now something from Jiva Goswami's writing, from the Sandarbhas. When Vyas, every Dwarapa Yuga is a different Vyas, it's a post. Someone does this. Every Dwarapa Yuga, the end. The whole body of the Vedas are divided into four to make it easy for people in Kali Yuga and written down. When that division is made, there's some balanced verses remaining. Jiva Goswami says it's like taking you divide 4 into 12, and you 4 into 15, it goes 3 times and you have a remainder. So that remainder was then taken and divided into the Puranas and the Itihasas. It came from the same body as the original one Veda. And the Vedas themselves say it. The four Vedas, as well as the...